If you think we're on the run, we are the boys.
Yes, hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Dad's Army podcast. Great to have you with us once again. This episode is going to be a commentary episode. We're talking about My British Buddy, that's Oliver and I, and that's coming up for you very soon. But just before we get stuck into that, Frank Williams has been in the news quite a bit over the last 4 weeks or so, the first of which was following the very sad news that Norman Wisdom had passed away just a few weeks ago now. Now, you may well have heard that, because that got very significant media coverage, certainly here in the UK, and I would imagine in other countries where he was popular as well. But what you may not know is that Frank Williams starred in 3 films with Norman Wisdom, and so on the day that it was announced that Norman had passed away, Frank Williams guested on BBC London, and that was actually on television, and there was about a 3.5 minute news item where Frank just talked about his experiences working with Norman. So in case you missed that, and of course for those of you outside of the UK, here's that news article now.
As we've been hearing, one of Britain's favourite comedians, Norman Wisdom, has died at the age of 95. Ken Dodd called him a giant of comedy who showed London humour at its finest with his unique blend of slapstick and tragedy. Of course, he was best known for playing the clumsy but lovable underdog Pitkin, who was forever apologising for his shortcomings to his boss, Mr. Grimsdale. Well, we're joined now by another veteran comic, actor Frank Williams, who starred alongside Norman Wisdom in 3 classic comedies. A very warm welcome to you.
Thank you.
It must be quite a difficult thing to hear something like that, a friend and colleague dying, although 95.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word legend gets overused, but I think in Sir Norman's case, it's true. I think he's a total legend and wonderful person to have worked with.
Now, you starred alongside him in 3 films, didn't you?
Well, I wouldn't use the word starred, but I was with him in 3.
Well, you would use the word starred.
The first film I did with him was The Square Peg, and I was a bit in trepidation of working with one of my great comedy heroes, but in point of fact, we'd never actually met. We had a scene together, but we were on opposite ends of a field telephone, so they did my close-up one day, his another. And then I did, I think the next thing I did with him was The Bulldog Breed. And again, my nerves were thinking, oh, I'm going to meet him this time. And he put me totally at ease by coming up to me and saying, Frank, we worked together on The Square Peg, but we never met. We had a good scene together, but
so
we never met.
An incredible memory.
Yes. I found that every time I met him, actually. He always seemed to know who I was. And in those days, I mean, I was a very young, inexperienced actor, just a jobbing actor like everybody else.
What is your kind of overriding impression of him? Because you often hear, don't you, that comedians can, you know, especially a troubled childhood like Norman Wisdom had, that, you know, he might be darker in the times when he was not on screen. What was your experience of him?
Well, quite the opposite of that. I don't think he may have had a dark side, but I never saw it. Whenever we met, he seemed to be jolly, jokey. He was totally professional when he was working, but off the set, he was also jokey and jolly and having a good time. He enjoyed life, that was it.
Yes, because, of course, he was born in London. He was born in Marylebone and brought up in Maida Vale and left school at 13. Quite a troubled childhood, but you portray a picture of a very, very happy, jolly man whose humour was very physical, if you like, which is perhaps, do you think, why it translated so well into other countries?
Well, I'm sure that was part of it, but also he's a very lovable character. And the other thing is he had great warmth and a wonderful, wonderful sense of pathos, which comes over to... And, of course, he could sing. I mean, he was a great, great man.
Oh, and one word to remember your friend and remember Norman Wisdom. How would you sum him up?
A wonderful, wonderful comedy actor with great pathos and a joy to work with.
Oh, Frank Williams, thank you so much for coming in. A real pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
So there you go. Despite it being a particularly sad news article, I have to say it was extremely good to see Frank Williams on TV again now. It's quite interesting, really, because the BBC didn't even mention his role in Dad's Army. And yes, I know he still looks very similar to how he portrayed the vicar 30, 40 years or so ago, but I think for the casual viewer, they may have wondered who precisely Frank was, if they weren't familiar with his work, but there you go. Anyway, I mentioned there were two different ways in which Frank has been quite prominent in the media over the last month or so, and here is the second. Frank is obviously a fan of the Alan Titchmarsh show, and he wrote a letter in, and Alan Titchmarsh read it out, and here it is.
Two famous people in one programme is a bit much, isn't it? First Phyllis Logan, but now a letter from Frank Williams, who was the vicar in Dad's Army, who says that he enjoys the programme and listens whenever he can. He said, "I played the part of the vicar in the TV series Dad's Army. In 1975 to 76, we did a stage version in the West End and on tour. It was a musical, incorporating songs from wartime Britain as well as some new material. We did a cast recording, which has recently been released as a CD. There are two items which might be of interest. Arnold Ridley singing Lords of the Air, and John Lemessurier with A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. Frank, I came to see it. It was at Richmond Theatre, I remember, when I was not but a lad, and I remember sitting and watching it and being absolutely entranced by both those numbers, particularly this one. John Lemessurier with A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. Pike is having a word with him first.
Hey, look, Uncle Arthur. Hmm? It's your old dinner jacket. Oh, did you wear it?
Ah, I can remember that very well. But it was a long time ago. You see, Frank, I went to a party and I met a lovely girl there. She was very charming, very, very charming indeed.
Was it Mum?
No, no. She was slightly different to your mother. But everything was different that certain night, the night we met. There was magic abroad in the air. There were angels dining at the Ritz. And a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I may be right. I may be wrong. But I'm perfectly willing to swear that as she turned and smiled at me, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. The moon that lingered over London town, poor puzzled moon, he wore a frown. But how was he to know we two were so in love? The whole darn world was upside down. The streets of town were paved with stars. It was such a romantic affair. And as we kissed and said goodnight, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I know, because I was there.
Uncle Arthur?
All right, Frank, don't worry. I'm coming.
Ah, wonderfully moving. John Lemessurier and A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, just for Frank Williams. Thanks for giving us so many happy memories, Frank. And just to remind us all of that wonderful, wonderful series.
So there you go, a very Frank Williams-orientated intro to this particular podcast. And yes, he does feature in the commentary episode that Oliver and I are going to talk about any moment now. And of course, this is one amongst several, I think, episodes where it's alluded to the fact that the vicar has a drink problem. Anyway, just before we get into the commentary on My British Buddy, a quick note about Christmas. Yes, Christmas is almost upon us, and I'm pleased to say here at the podcast we've managed to get some really fantastic seasonal celebrational material for you to listen to. So I'm in the process of editing it and putting a few final touches onto the actual recordings. But this year you'll have two Christmas special Dad's Army podcasts. I'm not going to go into a great amount of detail now because I think, you know, it will spoil the surprise a little bit. But certainly keep your ears peeled for some really interesting material over the next month or so. In the meantime, let's get stuck into the commentary. Same thing as usual applies. In a moment, you'll hear some music and then a countdown. 3, 2, 1, play. If you then hit play on your DVD or on your computer, however it is you've decided to watch this particular episode, then you'll be able to hear Oliver and I commentate on it as well. Don't forget to keep your feedback coming in. James@dadsarmypodcast.com or Oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com, and we'll have a feedback episode very soon into the new year. All the best for now, and we'll speak to you again Christmas time. Three, two, one, play. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast. Oh dear, that's really good, isn't it? What a fantastic start. And as I said, I can't really edit that.
No, it's all right.
This is a commentary episode. Not quite sure when it's going to go online, hence the reason why there's no number. And this time we're going to be watching My British Buddy.
Hey, here we are, we're back. And yeah, it's My British Buddy, which is episode 2 of the 6th season, so well into its stride into a series now.
Mm-hmm. This was first broadcast on Friday the 6th of June 1973, so this one was before I was born.
Yeah, way before I was born.
Indeed. Now, this is your choice, isn't it? Again.
It is. I watched it not long ago and just genuinely found it very funny, so I thought, well, let's share it with podcast viewers and see what you guys think as well.
Now this is I don't know whether or not you can call this a standard opening these days. I've said it is in the past where you get parade ground scenes, and I don't know whether or not the parade is actually the standard thing here, or whether or not it's the opening banter.
Yes.
Because they have opening banter in different settings when they open other episodes as well. And I think, to me, when I thought about this, it actually makes me realise how much they're reliant on the character's dialogue and the interaction between the two, as opposed to where it's actually physically set. And that might be an obvious thing to say, but there are so many programmes these days where, you know, they go for visual impact as opposed to character dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very rare, but you would start an episode without one of the main characters, isn't it? I mean, one of the peer, but you don't start.
You're thinking of Menace from the Deep.
Menace from the Deep, yeah.
And the same with The Recruit, actually, as well. Is that true? Or it's certainly without Mannering, anyway. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But I think it's a nice thing, and particularly here, as we're setting up the fact that the Americans are going to be... Is this the first American we've had in the show?
Oh, I think so, certainly. Yeah, I think it might even be the first reference that we've had to Americans, full stop.
And it's quite good, because this is quite an obvious way of bringing in, you know, a real feeling from... That was obviously apparent in World War II, but perhaps more so now, will people look back and say, oh, the Americans only joined then. Whether or not people in Britain at the time thought that they should be getting involved, I don't know.
I think it was difficult. I think they were quite annoyed, actually, and I'm not sure whether this is a matter of historical fact or whether it's just something that I've picked up, either from watching this episode in the past or perhaps other... films or TV programmes that include the American involvement in World War II, but I think the feeling was predominantly that they took their time about it.
Mm.
And people seem to think, well, the Americans really should have helped out before.
Yeah.
And I think that slightly... It flies in the face of the attitude that people really tried to advocate during the war, in as much as we're all together, we're all fighting the Nazis together, and stiff upper lip, and we'll be able to, we're British, we can do
yes.
And then you try and compare that to, well, actually, when the Americans came into the war, they were able to bring massive amounts of resources that really did put the Nazis under pressure.
Yes.
So you've almost got to begrudgingly accept the help. And I think the way that's manifested in this episode is through lots of jokes at the Americans' expense.
Oh, absolutely.
Took your time, didn't you?
No. I absolutely agree. The way that they... I mean, you know, if you think about it, the thing with Dad's Army is it's quite a cosy sitcom for the audiences. You know, we have our characters, we love them, and you know, we certainly don't like to ever see them in jeopardy. And of course, these brash Americans come in, they nick all the girls, and immediately we're on the side of the British, you know, of our boys, and we want them to not necessarily get involved with violence, but we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves in terms of a narrative here.
Well, we are, but it's interesting when you consider that both Jimmy Perry and David Croft were very much in their prime during wartime.
Yes.
So they'll be drawing very much on their experiences and the public feeling towards the war, and putting that into their writing. And the reason why we suddenly have all the empathy with the Brits and our heroes is because of the way the Americans are portrayed. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was based on a particular experience of one of the two writers.
It's quite interesting. I mean, this is something we'll never really know, but had the American version of The Deadly Attachment become a success as a pilot, this perhaps would have been the, as it's the next episode in our series, would have perhaps been the next episode they might have made had they been commissioned. I wonder how they might have changed the gags.
They would have done. The thing that I'm thinking of, it's an interesting point, but having said that, of course, The Deadly Attachment would have been the very first episode that had been aired in America.
Yes.
So there's no reason why that they would have just followed order.
Order,
no. But secondly, you think of something like 40 Towers that did get translated into Spanish, and all of a sudden Manuel became Portuguese.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think you'll find that, you know, had that been the case, then you actually think also of how patriotic the Americans are as a nation, and they always have been.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Britons or Brits are quite happy to poke fun at themselves.
Absolutely.
You know, you start talking about people in the post office queue and say how British that is. The Americans don't get that kind of self-effacing humour,
no.
You know, or they don't find it as funny as we do. And of course, that really is basically my British buddy wrapped up in a couple of lines, really. It's us saying, well, let's have the Americans there, we'll poke a bit of fun at them, and, you know, at their expense, as it turns out, and they're there as a bit of a kind of stooge character, particularly the Colonel.
Nice bit of Jimmy Beck, Walker at his best in the previous scene, and here it is. Hi, buddy, Arthur.
Walker with his notebook out, and of
yes.
course, you know, last scene in the previous episode, it's the same notebook.
Oh, yes. The chips.
That's
the
right.
Vicar and, get the chips written down. I said Vicar and Chips, and I've got that event permanently fixed on my brain. Here's a lovely Pamela Kandel, Mrs. Fox.
Yes.
And have we seen Pamela at this point in the series and what? Because I recall that she said that she had, that there was a gap in her appearances in the series.
Mm.
I know that from here on she appeared particularly, but I mean,
interesting. I'm really not too sure. I mean, the episode, as we said directly before this, was The Deadly Attachment, and then you're looking at the tail end of series 5, which was In Reverse Order, Time on My Hands, The Great Big Wheel, you know, the one that went round and round, Brush with the Law, and I don't remember her appearing in any of those three episodes, but who knows, maybe she has. But she's always kind of freshens up in episodes, and I like the way that her character develops, and it's one of these things where you don't get a terrific amount of development right at the early stages, but of course the very final episode, all of a sudden you get to find out so much more
about Mrs.
about Mrs. Fox, and you see Pamela's acting talents stretched a bit.
Well, this is Janet Davis's return to the series, because she didn't appear in Series 5 at all, and I, from what I gather, this is because she wasn't cast in the film, and so she took a break from the series. But this is quite, and of course we've got Wendy Richard about to appear shortly.
Yes.
It's quite a good, it's a good episode for the girls, you know. The first time we've had a really decent episode since Mum's Army for women in the series. So it's nice to see Janet back.
I think it's a good point you made there, where they do actually look for ways to involve a few female actresses.
Mm.
I think that's good. It's very, very evident in Mum's Army that, you know, it adds a slightly different dynamic. And even within the story, it throws the platoon into complete disarray.
Yes.
Because they don't know how to respond to women on parade.
No.
Whereas in the pub, you know, in a relaxed setting like we've got here, and you've actually got pretty much all of the characters, the main characters,
yeah,
and the peripheral characters in one quite long scene,
yes,
here.
Yeah.
And I think it works brilliantly. We're watching Eric Sinclair at the moment, who is just enjoying a double whiskey, I think, with
with Frank. Yeah.
Another, I mean, you mentioned this just before we started recording. You know, the allusion to the vicar's
being an alcoholic problem, which is absolutely fantastic. And here's lovely Wendy Richard.
Yes,
lovely. I mean, lovely to pair her with Mannering for these scenes. You know, I mean, this just this gold dust, very little bit of banter. Oh, and here he is. One of my favourite characters, controversially.
And mine too. And you know, I think we're in a minority there, yeah. Oliver. There is a very large anti-Cheeseman contingent. Yeah. Although, having said that, I've mentioned this in the past in previous podcasts, and we've had listeners email in to say, don't worry, I like Cheeseman too.
Yeah,
so we're not completely on our own now.
I know that, you know, for obvious reasons, he wasn't welcomed into the main canon. But when you tell from Thomas, a wonderful character actor, when you actually look at what he's doing, he's a very unique performer. And this is the first of my little mini quizzes for James here, if you will indulge me. Telfran Thomas is one of three guest cast members in this episode who appeared in Doctor Who. Can James recall what stories Telfran Thomas appeared in? The reason I ask is that one of them was the same year as this episode of Dad's Army.
Right, so this was 1969.
73.
Oh, goodness, sorry, I'm getting this completely confused. Yeah, 73. In that case, then, well, I know he was in Spearhead from Space, but that was 1970.
Yeah.
And there I struggle. Ambassadors of Death?
The Green Death Boy, isn't
it? I knew it had death in it. Yes, of course, yes.
Telfran played a miner in Doctor Who in a story that was set in Wales, which got a lot of ridicule for being quite cliched and stereotyped. But arguably, you've got one of the most prominent Welsh actors of his time playing Cheeseman.
That's because he was the only one.
Yes.
But I think we probably better not get too much into Doctor Who, because we'll get emails again from you wonderful listeners telling us to stick on target. We have, what's his name?
Doctor Hodges. Who's cousin. Bill Perry.
Yes, Hodges indeed.
In one of his better episodes, I think, because I think this is when he really shines, is when the audience, you know, the audience will have a slight sort of empathy with what he's saying here. He's sort of saying what everyone else is thinking. You know, I think sometimes Hodges is a bit too OTT. But here in a pub, when he's being a bit of a lout, I believe him more. You know, when he's not, oh, I'm having one of my funny turns. When he's giving the Americans a bit of stick.
I know what you mean. Actually, I guess he's trying. I don't know whether this is deliberate on Bill Pertwee's part, but you know, this is basically his natural setting. I can imagine Hodges being down the pub quite a bit when he's off duty. You know, and this is more his natural environment than Mannering's.
Yes.
And, you know, I think you hear in Don't Forget the Diver that Mannering says, oh, he always enjoys a nice drink after parade.
Yes.
But it's in a much more convivial, almost a little bit more posher.
Yeah. It's a different environment altogether, absolutely.
And this is where we get our first view of the Americans.
Yeah.
And chewing gum.
And this great
swearing.
Hey, buddy, put it there. Look at John Lemesra's face. Absolutely gold dust.
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. And again, it always surprises me, but it must be true. Whenever you see a camera from, you know, this particular era used, the flash, it almost blinds people.
Yes, the old cameras that we used to use. It's the same as you see a flame on these old television cameras. There's a sort of green glow around it.
Mm.
The American general, is he a captain or a general?
He's
played by an actor called Alan Tilvaren.
No, Colonel.
He's a Colonel. US Colonel.
I just suddenly remembered.
Well, he was also in a Doctor Who. Alan Tilvaren.
Go on in quickly. Which one?
He was in an episode called Planet of Giants.
Oh, William Hartnell story.
Yes.
Three-parter.
But Alan was also in another Dad's Army, wasn't he? He was.
Yes, he was. I know this one.
Yeah. Here we go.
Wait a minute. He was a. I do know this one. Yes, did he play an Italian?
He did, absolutely, he was an Italian captain.
And it was in, you know, it was one, the one with the story, The Old Empty Barn, Battle Score.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Ah, thank you. At least I've got one of your questions correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I suddenly thought, no, he wasn't an American, but his face is certainly
He's
familiar.
Obviously, he's good at accents, because of being an Italian in one episode and an American in another. And this is a wonderful setup here, going for remembrance of a platoon. And let me look at the ship, the handshake there, just going on and on and on, that sort of long lingering. And Arthur trying to look proud, but then ever so gradually thinking, what's Jones going to say now? Oh dear, no, stop it, stop.
Do you think the... you know, the Americans, when they arrived, really were incredibly ignorant of the circumstances and the situation that wartime had created within, you know, England. Because they've been pictured here as coming in and being idiots.
Yes.
You know, and he's rectified later because he goes, oh, we didn't realise how hard, you know, you've had it. But, I mean, presumably that's another element that either Jimmy or David have brought in from their own experiences.
Quite possibly so. I mean, I think certainly in terms of the narrative, it helps. It helps at first they, not villains, that's wrong in a comedy, but they're, you know, well, it's like a panto villain, I suppose, isn't it? You know, you love to hate. But then they sort of rectify, oh, we didn't realise the kind of pressure you guys are under. But then, of course, they've nicked their girls. So, you know, it's playing with people's opinions, isn't it? And morals.
It makes you wonder, you know. I mean, clearly the Americans thoroughly enjoy the pub atmosphere, but there isn't anything quite like pubs in America. And there certainly wasn't. Back in the war, there were diners and there were bars, but they were frequented by a completely different kind of clientele, if that's the right
word.
Yes,
no, absolutely.
So, it's interesting because we're, you know, part of British culture is pubs, which is sadly on decline at the moment. Just one of the casualties of the recession, I think. But I think that's one of the things that I would thoroughly enjoy now, is if I had American friends. I've got a couple, but none of whom I think have got any plans to come over, just to show them this is a British pub.
Yes.
This is what we do in the evening. We sit around in comfy chairs, drinking beer, you know.
Well, this whole setup is quite timeless, really. I mean, this whole British-American, we're similar in so many ways, we're totally different in so many other ways.
Absolutely.
It's quite a timeless thing that Jimmy and David have picked up on here. And I think it's one of the appeals, certainly one of the reasons it's my favourite kind of episode, because it takes the characters out of their comfort zone, and suddenly their women are being taken off, and you know they're taller. The Americans are all sort of portrayed a bit like teddy boys, aren't they? They're chewing their gum, you know. I mean, I know it's a bit ahead of that sort of era in America, but you could almost see the American actors in Greece, you know.
Oh, you'll have to speak to my wife about that. Oh, right. She absolutely adores Greece big time. And I said it's a good story spoiled by lots of songs. Going to be over in about 10 minutes then as well, which would be even better. But yeah, I think this is quite interesting. We're talking again about the clash of cultures a little bit. And again, you suddenly get Godfrey being incredibly polite and presenting him with some cakes.
Yes.
From his sister, yes. which is great, because you try and do that with any kind of American who, you know, and the image of an American, and I appreciate images are just that, they're stereotypes a lot of the time, is of a reasonably cool person. I mean, personally, I've never met an inarticulate American.
Oh, no, never have I. They are cool.
Well, this is it. And
cool
then
cats.
You're giving them, you know, some cupcakes.
There's
something just funny about that.
And it's a very subtle thing this time. So you and I have both remarked before how much we like the class divide between Mannering and Wilson. And there, of course, it was just a great example of Mannering's pomposity and Wilson's down-to-earth, where we're not real soldiers. And that's the worst thing you could have possibly said.
Well, they're actually trying to stretch the extremes, aren't you? Because Wilson doesn't really believe that, I think. In other areas or in other episodes, he's really very serious.
Oh, yeah, I'm very proud of his soldier team. Absolutely.
Yeah, whereas, of course, then you've got the Americans coming in being very cool. Hey, well, you know, we'll sort this mess out for you. And you've just got the conflict, which is great. Now, one thing I did want to mention on this has still got people like Colin Bean and a few other back row in it as well. And, you know, they don't get a single line. All they do is stand around in a pub all day.
Yeah.
Now, I'm absolutely certain, A, this is not a real pub. As you can tell, I think this is probably the same set used for the church hall.
Yeah, quite probably,
But, you know, not a bad job.
No.
I mean, if you can get that kind of work...
Well, speaking of which, it ties in nicely to the third of my guest actors. One of the American soldiers, he just doesn't have any dialogue, is an actor called John Cannon. There you see him there with his arm around Ivy. He was a BBC extra stalwart for about 20 years. He appeared in many Doctor Who's, guards getting shot and things. And
Doctor Who?
Yeah.
So I like Doctor Who.
Yeah. EastEnders as well. He was he propped up the bar in EastEnders for many years as well. So, no, absolutely, it must be, you know... I mean, this is quite an involved, because all the extras are acting here. I think it's almost wrong to call them extras, you know. They're playing parts and keeping the scene alive.
I mean, we've mentioned that before, I'm certain. Yeah, is that it? You know, and it's just consistently very, very good acting from absolutely everybody.
Yeah, taking it seriously.
Yeah, and it's something you don't get to see so much in. Well, you do in EastEnders, but you've got Fraser. Sorry, I'm looking at Fraser in the background rather than the captain in the foreground.
Yeah.
But he's got a pipe and he's smoking, and you tend not to see so much of that these days, even in, you know, dramas that are set during war and other things. It's a bit of a taboo thing there, although EastEnders still show characters smoking.
Oh, I love this. I love this reply from Wilson. In a minute he says, what do you mean by that? Nothing really.
Yes.
Everyone gets some good gags in this episode, actually. It's a very, you know, Pike doing his over-the-top description.
Yeah, the give us a clue kind
of thing for
a highball. Had you ever heard of a highball?
No, before my time.
Well, you never know. Was that an American accent?
It was an
You're normally so good at accents.
Oh, here's Bill.
Yeah, just a kind of... well, he actually... he comes in and he's coming from the same kind of place that the platoon are.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah, normally, you know, we're all thinking this different, but here...
Did you see Arthur Lowe just positioning himself nicely behind Hodges there?
Yeah, get his mark.
Knows what's coming, clearly.
Yeah.
Make sure it all kind of choreographs. And I guess this must be some kind of official choreography.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it would have all been marked out and rehearsed, you know. I don't know how long they have for rehearsals. I assume back in the day, probably 3 or 4 days, you know.
I honestly have no idea. And this, of course, is a newspaper, a prop that must have been specially prepared.
Yeah.
At some point, and I wonder where it is. It was probably discarded very quickly.
Yeah. I wonder what Arthur thought of him being referred to as Doughboy. quite a nasty sort of... here's Robert Ragland.
Doughboy, isn't that an expression for the Americans?
They said Doughboy meets for Tommy.
Doughboy. Oh, right, I see. So, yes, and a Tommy being British.
Is it? Oh, I thought it was American. Oh, well, I've got it the wrong way around. You see?
Yeah, yeah.
I've learned something. I was thinking Tommy Gunn. See? Yeah. I've got
and
it all
there's
wrong.
There's reasons for it. I couldn't tell you what it is, but they are my listeners. I mean, you're normally far more knowledgeable than us.
Let us know in the feedback, please. Correct us.
What's a doughboy?
Educate us.
And why is a doughboy called a doughboy? But there you are. Now, this is the second episode that I can think of that I've seen recently where Arthur Lowe sports a rather nice black eye.
The other one being when... Is he wearing a tuxedo?
Yes.
Yeah, and Mrs. Mannering opened a cupboard into his face.
Yes. I believe there are some novelty light shades involved in that.
I can't remember the name
of
it.
It's special, isn't it? It's the love of 3 hours.
Oh, yes.
I think.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I think you have better recollect of particular scenes and actors.
Yes.
I remember the episodes.
Yeah, you remember what they're called.
To. Yeah.
It's quite a very good makeup. I mean, it looks like a pretty vicious black eye.
Yeah, but I think it's just the way that it doesn't seem to compromise what authority Mannering has. You know, he just kind of acts quite disappointed, and obviously he's quite annoyed. But I would have quite liked to have seen him with 2 black eyes, you know, as well. That would have been quite...
absolutely, that would have been very, very good fun.
Panda.
Panda.
Yeah. But... again, I think this is where Mannering is trying to, and I say think, because we haven't got the subtitles up here, listeners, we're just watching the pictures, but I think this is where he tries to get things down in writing and try and explain.
Yeah, to clear their names, yeah. Of course, it's absolutely hopeless, because they've all been getting involved in the action, even Godfrey.
Which, of course, makes it even funnier.
Yeah.
And again, it's another one of these scenes where, you know, it's relatively informal, and yet they're all contributing, and it's just fun. It's yeah. just fun. They're not actually talking about anything militaristic or planning anything.
It's one of the better ensemble episodes, this one, I think, where everyone gets a slice of the gag, but there's not too much. Well, because there's no location film, there's not too much running around that sort of sometimes pads out. I mean, that's not my sort of favourite kind of comedy, is when it's, you know, bit too sort of Three Stooges running around, sort of slapstick and things. I don't know if we've got the visual gag of the newspaper, but that's a little bit more clever, I think. But
yes.
I like the fact everyone gets a good gag in this episode.
No, I agree, and it's sometimes hard to do commentaries on fairly heavily dialogue-based episodes.
Yes.
And the first episode, or I think the second episode that I did a commentary with, and that was with Angela, was the King was in his counting house. And that is almost exclusively dialogue-based. And it's not that different to My British Buddy from that point of view. And sometimes it's hard to pick out interesting little stories and things, but hopefully we've been keeping you entertained. Pike with the visual humour again, yeah. And Mannering's response. Again, that happens time and time and time again throughout Dad's Armies in 100 different ways.
Yes, yeah.
And that, for me, makes me laugh every time. it's very, very interesting.
Oh, here we are, we're back. And as I was sort of mentioning earlier, it's that balancing act Jimmy and David are playing to sort of make you think, actually, they're not so bad because they didn't realise. You know, you think, oh, maybe this has got a happy ending. After the American sergeant doesn't have that on his face. He's still doing his teddy boy chewing the gum. You know, he wants to ridicule you. Of course, Captain Mainwaring, old Talfrin is back, isn't he? He wants to get that special photograph, doesn't he?
And of course, we don't see Cheeseman again until the second episode of the following series.
That's right, yes.
Man of Action, I believe it is. And therefore, this is the only episode that James Beck and Talfrin Thomas acted in together.
Yeah.
Which is given they have zero interaction, I think. Mm. You know, it's not immediately noticeable.
But I think sometimes you don't really realise, because the rehearsals lasted over a certain amount of time, you know, location filming. I think sometimes if people have only met on one job, they might spark up a friendship that lasts years in the acting profession. You just never know.
Well, acting is certainly one of these professions where you meet people continually.
Yeah.
And the amount... It's why I think they say that a lot of actors are actually quite lonely, because the expectation is that actors meet so many different people and strike up so many different friendships. It's all on a superficial level on a very fleeting basis.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, Dad's Army, I think, was probably an exception to that, because there were so many stories, and there are still today so many stories told about friendships that lasted for a very long period of time.
And they're still meeting up now, those who are still left with us.
Indeed. Now, the guy who played the Colonel, Alan
Tilvern, yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, sadly not. I think he died in the 80s or the early
90s. Long time
yeah.
ago. It's hard to say from this how old he really is. And of course, you've got Jimmy and David, who are older than most of the cast here, and they're still with us.
Yeah, it's unfair, isn't it? So many people whose stories could have been told, but podcasts weren't around when sadly some of these actors were passed away, and it's a real shame. At least their work continues. I mean, Philip Maddox got the great quote that he feels he will live forever through that one episode of Dad's Army. It's an amazing series for these people to have been in.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're eternally grateful for it as well. And Philip Maddock in particular, you know, has been at several Dad's Army events. And we're getting to the conclusion of the episode here, so I think we probably ought to talk about what we're seeing. just for a change.
What's that old timer?
There we go again for the second, the second Black Eye. But I do think it's good the way that they freeze frame the ending there.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? It's playing with something new, you know. And
yeah,
as a whole, I think that's a rather good episode.
I think it's one of the best, and I also think that if you enjoy My British Buddy, then I think you should seek out the radio version of it as well, because that's also got the same actor in playing the
Alan Flanagan.
Yes, he definitely did the radio version as well.
Oh,
and wow. I didn't even have to look that up, I just knew it.
That's
an excellent adaption, and again, because it's so dialogue based, it's probably relatively easy to try and adapt as well.
Yeah.
But you just look at all of the names that come up here, that's six. Vern Morgan as the landlord.
He did at least two more, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in Absent Friends. I'm certain he was the barman in Absent Friends, and possibly Don't Forget the Diver, I'm not too sure. But something we can look at in the future.
Well, we really hope you enjoyed listening, and please do email us in if you have any questions or want to correct us on everything we've got wrong.
Or indeed, if you want to ask us for a commentary on another episode, then feel free to send in your requests, James at Dad's Army Podcast or Oliver at Dad's Army Podcast.com. And we'll be back very soon.
All the best. Bye.